Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studio. I came into today's podcast listed as questionable with a voice issue. So if I start coughing or hacking up, apologize in advance. I'll do my best to save you from that. As I was saying. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. Just taking it easy. Still recovering from some previous issues that I've had, but
we both had a rough couple weeks. I mean, different, very different, but not been good for either of us. Did you watch the town halls?
Yes, kind of. Like I did some flipping between the two of them, and eventually just kind of petered out.
Okay.
You know, like they, a lot of people were complaining about Savannah Guthrie's style.
I was one of them.
Why? What's your deal?
Because I felt like she inserted herself so aggressively into the conversation. I think a town hall should be, here's Joe Smith. Joe works at the local hardware store. He voted for this person and want to do this. Talk to Joe Smith. Joe Smith says, ask a question. You answer it. Move on to whoever else. And I felt like she was injecting herself. If I can put it in comedy terms, she was like a comedy host who felt like doing 5 minutes between everyone else's set. Just taking over the show, and I found that to be very objectionable.
The reality is, we've had debate moderators that were garbage, that didn't know how to put Trump or Biden in check, and didn't really ask questions and hold either of them accountable. And frankly, Trump is the president of the United States. He needs to be held accountable. He needs to be able to, answer tough questions. And he should have to answer tough questions because, frankly, he's put a lot of bullshit out there. And so, people say, oh, well, a town hall should be... No. See, that all the rules went out the window when Trump decided that there are no rules, right? Trump says he doesn't have to play by rules, so fuck you guys. You know what? I'm glad she did what she did. She needed to put him in a... She literally had to put him in his place because... who was the last moderator at the last...
Chris Wallace?
Yeah, whatever. Whoever... The guy who doesn't have balls, that guy. and every who other moderator in every other debate. And it's, oh, but it's a town hall. It's a time for the people to speak. Get the fuck out of here. Most of those people are plants. Right? Like, I mean, it was all stage bullshit anyway. And so someone needed to... someone needed to put him, kind of front and center and ask him pointed questions and not let him backpedal and back out. And we needed to see him, right, try to bullshit his way out of this, out of these situations where he couldn't.
No, right? he was bad.
He was really bad, right? Now listen, and the funny thing is, the people defending him, right, his surrogates... they're saying this. They're actually saying the exact same thing you are.
Right.
Right. And what they're not saying is, they're not talking about how great he performed. They're not talking about how he handled himself so well. They're not talking about how, it was unfair of her to attack him the way she did, but he answered every question and it all makes perfect sense. No, they can't do that because they know none of those things are actually true. And frankly, that's what you have to look at, right? Like, she asked the questions, he didn't have answers for them. They weren't gotcha fucking questions,
right?
Right? Like, I mean, we're asking these people simple, basic questions, and people are throwing like, oh, that's a gotcha question. Like, is the sky blue? Is not a fucking gotcha question. Like, look up and the sky is blue, right? It's not about like narratives and alternative facts and all this other bullshit that the MAGA country has been throwing out for the last 4 years. So now it takes Savannah fucking Guthrie to get up there and go after his fucking neck, right? I don't care who the leader is. More people should have done it to Obama, gone after his fucking neck and put him on his heels and make him answer for the shit. That these are our fucking leaders. Our leaders need to be held fucking accountable, right? And it shouldn't take fucking Savannah Guthrie at a town hall to fucking pull the fucking knives out and go after him. I don't see what the problem is here.
Well, so I watched some of the Fox News post town hall coverage, and of course they were doing exactly what you said. They're calling them gotcha questions, which gotcha questions in some people's mind has become anything that isn't a total fucking softball. And they were saying that that's all Joe Biden got. I didn't watch the entirety of Biden's. I watched all of Trump's and I taped Biden's and I watched most of it. But unless there's something I missed, unlike Trump, Biden didn't have someone come out there and tell him how handsome he was. Did you see Trump?
Yeah.
I mean, I found that hilarious. It's not a big deal. I'm just like, Mr. President, you're so handsome, especially when you smile.
Yeah, but tough crowd. Well, I think that's a little bit misleading as to what that was, right? Like, so she actually played that pretty well. Oh, you're so handsome when you smile, right? Why do you do that? Because Trump is a narcissist. And anyone who compliments him, he's like, oh, I like you. I like you're telling me I look nice. I like you. Tell me more. And then what did she do? What did she ask him about?
I honestly don't remember.
All right, so I believe that she asked him. I think it was specifically about a healthcare question. Now I wanted to remember this, and then I forgot. And part of this is the whole thing going on with me. My fucking memory sucks, which it sucked before from all the football and everything else, but now it really sucks. But anyway, she did ask a very pointed question that he couldn't really back out of, and maybe it was on prescription drug prices or something along those lines. But he didn't have a good answer or a good response to it. So she used that to curry favor with him, to get him to loosen up. She did that as a tactic. It wasn't, hey, you're so handsome, and what's your favorite pizza topping? Like, she asked him a legitimate question.
Fair, and that speaks volumes as to how easily manipulated and how easily played he is.
Yes.
And this is a woman who looked like a librarian in South Florida.
Right.
And this is why Vladimir Putin wants 4 more years of this guy, because
play him like a fiddle.
He has been, and God, 4 more years of Trump not even facing a potential re-election, Putin will own him like it'd be awful. As far as Biden's town hall was total milquetoast, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah,
he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything great. He did show that he's not the doddering old fool that the right tried to paint him out as, but. No, he didn't fumble all over himself.
I mean, no, he didn't. He
never
didn't
been
that,
a great. But he's never been a great speaker.
So again, I'm not a huge Biden fan. There was nothing really with his that caught my eye, that stood out. Like, I mean, he did get a lot of softball questions. It was, George Stephanopoulos kind of like letting things happen, and that's it was a town hall, a favorable town hall. And that's the way it should have gone. Nothing really happened. Okay, congratulations. That's fine, I guess. Whatever. But I was more intrigued and interested in what happened with Trump's. I appreciate it more. Now, look, you can get mad at Savannah Guthrie all you want. She didn't make Trump react the way that he did. Right? Everyone gets so upset. Trump loses his shit and gets all blustered and starts talking out of his ass and saying random things that don't make any sense. The person who asks him the question doesn't make him respond that way. He responds that way.
I'm not defending Trump's comments, right?
People get so... It's like, well, if she wouldn't have asked him the question that way, if she wouldn't have been so aggressive, he wouldn't have acted like a special needs kid. Well, I mean... Or maybe just have him be able to figure out how to answer a question directly, without trying to spin it and, just kind of own some of the bullshit that he's done, which he can't. Okay, fine. Scale of 1 to 10. I thought it was bullshit that
they didn't have a debate to begin with.
Well, that they didn't have a debate to begin with, and that they put these town halls up against each other, right? And I think NBC is really the one to hold accountable, because I think Biden's was in place first, and then NBC jumps in with Trump and says, we'll do one. And people are like, why would NBC do this? Like, NBC,
ratings and money.
Like, they've made money off of Trump, right? Like, they were making money off of that ridiculous show that he had before, which I still don't understand how, but somehow, what was it? The Apprentice.
Yep.
I still don't know how that show got it, like how people were interested in it, but they were. And it was on NBC. They know that he gets ratings, so they're just like, all right, screw it. We'll do it for the money. And they did. And I think that was garbage, but I understand why they did it. I just thought it was really just poor taste and, you know, basically par for the course, you know?
Whenever people call NBC or other major networks super liberal, whatever, they care more about money than anything else.
That's it.
Their politics go way, way, way down the list of what motivates them.
They don't care about the politics. They will say and do and fan the flames of whatever if it continues to push money into their coffers, right? Like, they will continue, like, they're like, oh, well, we'll back this person. We'll highlight this. We'll highlight that. You know, this is how we're going to make the headlines. You know why? Because it'll get people to click on it, and they'll get really upset. They'll put stuff in the comments. They'll read the ads, and someone will get, eventually, they'll get tired of the mean comments. They'll get distracted by an ad. They'll click the button, and they'll go down the funnel.
Yep.
And that's the, you know, that's how they do it on the websites. And then in terms of TV, they know that people will keep watching.
Yeah.
Right. And then what happens when you watch? They watch commercials, everything else. Now DVR and all that stuff kind of hurts that to a degree. But I mean, even with some of this stuff, even when you record it, I recorded something the other day and I went to go watch it on DVR and I couldn't fast forward through it.
Okay.
And because the way between the DirecTV and the network, I think it was something I recorded on TBS or whatever, I wasn't allowed to fast forward through the commercials. I had to watch them.
Hmm.
So
I've never had that happen to me.
Yeah, it's happened. It happened a couple times actually. The first time it happened when I was recording South Park, and Comedy Central wouldn't let me fast forward through that. You know, TBS does it with like American Dad. I watch a lot of cartoons, but yeah, just like stuff like that. So anyway, a little bit off topic, but I don't know. I don't look these debates, these town halls. They're not helping our body politic. I am glad that the election is 3 weeks away.
Less than that now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to, you know, get it down to the hour and the minute. But I mean, we're less than 3 weeks away, and I'll be glad when it's over. Hopefully, it goes the way I want it to. But ultimately, I just need it to be over.
I've got an idea for an app. I want to create an app that tells all the people that send me texts, emails, put flyers on my door or whatever that I've already voted so they can save their time and money and leave me the fuck alone. If I can come up with that app, I will be fabulously wealthy.
Well, you're not the first person to think of it. I'm pretty sure someone's already working on it. And if it works, I'll definitely use it because every social media thing you go on, I mean, it is everywhere. You know, but it's good. You know what? I'm glad. I've never seen it like this before with the amount of awareness as it relates to voting.
Right.
Right. Registering, getting a ballot, knowing what's on the ballot, who's running for what, like all that information is so in your face, readily available, whether it's on social media, whether it's just in Google on, like, you know, you go to Google something, you know, there's stuff there. The amount of things happening in local communities about voting, registration, and all that, like, that to me is critical, right? And yes, because this election, you know, no, I don't like Donald Trump and I want him out of office, but I think this is how it should be, right? We want more people involved in this process, yeah. But we want them to know what they're voting for and why they're voting. And so that only helps us to have people that are more engaged. Now, unfortunately, there's all the negative that goes along with it. The you know, the back and forth on social media and the, you know, the opinion shows on these cable networks getting people all fired up. But on the ground level, just being able to educate people on the basics, right? Who's running for what in your ward or your district and your state? You know, what is, like, because then the party stuff barely even matters, right? Like, I mean, like, in some of the stuff, like, you're only going to have so much information on a person, but it's just good that you know what's going on, and then there's so much effort to get this information in front of people. I think it's ultimately bad for Trump. I don't think it's good for Trump to have more people, right? If you have a record number of people that vote, I think Trump gets his doors blown off. I mean, to the point where he's going to want to try to sue, but I think it'll be, if some of the estimates I'm seeing are close to accurate in terms of voter turnout, it could be a landslide for Biden. I mean, in a legitimate landslide. Because, I mean, listen, if Biden were to take Florida and Texas, then this it's over. It's absolutely over from an electoral standpoint. And, you know, and that means that from a popular vote standpoint, it's not even close.
And so I was actually going to kind of ask you about that because I agree with you. That's what the polls are saying. Now, 4 years ago at this time, I was still doing my I might vote for Gary Johnson thing. You were adamant that my contention that Trump had no chance, which I didn't sway until the very end when I finally plugged my nose and voted for Hillary. It seems like you're getting a very different vibe this four years later, as are a lot of other people. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's definitely a different vibe. I mean, I think, I'll never be a fan of the DNC, you know, the Democratic National Committee. Yep. I'm just not. I don't trust them. I feel that they are very inept and inadequate in a lot of ways, especially when it comes to leadership. But what I will say is that they learned something that they did not. They learned something from the last time in terms of fundraising, right? And so this is where the Bernie people are really pissed because they have no arguments, right?
Right.
And what I'm saying is, so the Democrats, what they figured out is, you know what? We need to. You're right. Let's figure out this money thing. Screw the big donors. How do we get more individual people donating money? How do we get more grassroots? Right. And they looked at what Trump did. They looked at what Bernie did. And so they went and they made an app, right? And they made an app where it's easy to donate. You can go in. You can donate $1, $10, $5, whatever. And it's called Act Blue. And with that app, they have raised a ridiculous amount of money. Right, insane amounts, so much money that you've got people, like random people running, right, in states, like just for fucking comptroller, right, with just hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? I mean, people who normally would have, right, like, you know, a $10,000 campaign budget, like now have, you know, six, seven figures to run with because people are so just like donating and then, you know, like the money is just tallying up, right? And so, it just making it easier than it's ever been to donate as a whole to the Democratic Party and then allow that money to go specifically to where you want it to go. And by doing that, they are just blowing the doors off of fundraising. Now, people are like, well, that doesn't necessarily indicate, you know, how people are going to vote. Well, that kind of does.
I wish it didn't.
Right. It kind of does. And listen, if people have money, then it allows them to get their message out, right? In sure. Multiple different ways, right? Like just not, you know, like they can get radio ads, they can get TV time, they can go in the local newspaper, they can buy time at certain places, they can pay more people to get on the ground and do work for them. They can pay a social media manager, right? Like they can pay someone to get on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and tweet out, witty comments about the person that they're going up against, or, you know, make comments about things that are happening in real time. And understanding how social media works with the algorithms and the specific targeting that you can do. If you're a person who thought you were going to have a $10,000 budget, you know, and $8,000 of that is because you sold your wife's, you know, Honda Accord, you know, right, so you could run for whatever office. But now, all of a sudden, you've got 100 times or 10 times what you thought you were going to have, and you have a decent message, then that is a game changer. And you're seeing it up and down the ticket. And to me, that's a big indicator, right? Like, that's a big indicator. Like, people's ability to raise money and get in front of people is something that matters. And so how does that relate to Joe Biden and Donald Trump in the big show? It's, well, what they learned last time was, look, like, one, they didn't run out of money, but they didn't do a good job of allocating money, right, to specific
places. You're talking 2016.
In 2016, the Democrats and Hillary Clinton did not do a good job of allocating money. They were tight on money, but not so tight that they needed to avoid places. They did need to be strategic on how they spent money in places, but they chose specifically to not go to Wisconsin, to not go to Michigan, things like that. Now, you don't have that problem. Right now, right. It's not about having enough money. It's not about allocation. Now it's just about going and doing. And I think Joe Biden is the type who wants to be on the ground, who wants to go to every place, especially in the Midwest. You know, he's a guy, you know, Delaware, Scranton, you know, different places in Michigan, especially now, given the things that happened with the governor in Michigan, he's going to want to be there in support of her. He's going to want to get into Wisconsin knowing what happened. He's going to want to go to Iowa. He's going to want to go to all these places and get in front of the people, you know, so that they see him. And it's not just Fox News and CNN. You need to be in front of the local news, Fox 7 and ABC 9 and WBXT 24, whatever the channels are, because you got a lot of people that they trust their local news more than they do the big cable news.
True.
So if you come into town, right, and they see you on local news talking and you know, just being honest with people and doing whatever, and then people are talking, that's something. It's just something different and a little bit more genuine. And that's something that Hillary was missing and lacking in 2016. And I don't think Joe Biden's going to fall short on it.
And I think another thing is the Democrats don't seem to be taking this for granted. No. In 2016, they definitely did. And this time around, there's, you know, people are saying, hey, things are looking good, but it's no time to quit. And they're just their foot on the gas. And I think that's huge.
I agree. And I think that... I think the Democrats are still missing big time on messaging, right? I just think they're really missing big time on messaging, and that's just something you're not going to change. But they are just getting out there, right? Like they've got the money, and they're getting out there, and they're getting Joe Biden in front of people, right? Like so, is it better to have a mediocre message and be able to see, you know, more people face to face? Or have a great message and, you know, kind of isolate yourself in your...
Nobody sees it.
Right. And so, I mean, I think we learned that having a great message and not showing it to anyone isn't the way to go. That's what Hillary did in 2016.
Well, I don't know that Hillary had a great message.
I think, no, Hillary had a pretty solid message. If this guy gets in the fucking White House, we're going to hell in a handbasket.
Okay.
And she wasn't wrong.
True.
You know, I mean, I, you know, some of the bias that was thrown towards Hillary, that's fine if you feel that it was justified. But, I mean, here you go. Congratulations.
Right. Well, so I agree with what you're saying. And I think the Republicans are definitely showing desperation. And it sounds like Hunter Biden's emails are going to become the topic of the week. There's going to be another debate this coming week.
Jim.
Yes.
Do you know this story?
Not really. I know.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
Okay, go for it.
I'm so excited. I'm actually very excited you don't know. So this is how it went down. Allegedly.
Hello.
So the story goes like this. I wish we had music to play over it because
I haven't seen you this happy in a long time.
It's just like because the first, I don't know, five times I read it, I'm like, are you fucking serious? Okay. So allegedly...
Okay.
All right. So allegedly, Hunter Biden, who lives on the West Coast, got on a plane with his laptop because it was broken and flew to Delaware. When he got to Delaware, he dropped off his broken laptop to Joe Bob's laptop.
Right, I actually heard a little bit of this now that you say that.
Right. And so he drops it off to this guy who's partially blind. So he couldn't see him. The guy who he dropped it off to couldn't see him. To identify him, and Hunter Biden then proceeds to leave the laptop there and forget about it, right? Completely forgets about it, never to be seen at this computer fix-it shop again. And there's allegedly a, you know, Beau Biden nonprofit sticker on the computer to indicate... For sure that it is Hunter Biden's laptop,
okay. Right?
Because no one else could have a Beau Biden,
right?
Whatever, you know, nonprofit sticker on their computer. But nonetheless, there's that. So when Hunter Biden doesn't return for his laptop, this guy, who owns a computer repair shop, decides that it is now his property, so he can snoop through it, the hard drive, and look what's on it. And so he did. And he found all these emails and he found all these images and pictures and this money trail leading to Hunter Biden and possibly Joe Biden and Russia and China. So he knew that he had to get this to the FBI, and he called the FBI repeatedly, and they wouldn't take it. So he calls Rudy Giuliani, and he gives it to Rudy, and Rudy says, "Oh, my God, what is this? I must do something with it as a patriot of the United States and as the attorney of Donald Trump." So the FBI or the computer repair guy gives the laptop to Rudy Giuliani. Rudy then proceeds to hold the laptop and the information on it for safekeeping and for verification purposes. And then says he and his team have vetted the information, and it all leads to a trail of corruption that intertwines Joe Biden along with Hunter Biden and people from Ukraine, Russia, Burisma, China. It's all right there, clear as day, on the hard drive of this laptop that this blind guy happened to come across because Hunter Biden flew across the country to drop it off there to be fixed and never picked it up.
Excuse me. So now that you say that, I had heard some of that story. I heard that the guy was partially blind. I didn't know Rudy got involved. For some reason, I thought Steve Bannon was involved.
Well, is there
a second computer with second hard drive?
No. The reality of what has likely transpired is most of this is bullshit, right? So
certainly, well, Rudy Giuliani wouldn't lie,
right? Well, I mean, the reality is that this is bullshit. Now, did someone drop a laptop off with a Bo Biden bumper sticker on it? Sure, probably. But this is bullshit. Whether it's Russians or it's just straight up Rudy Giuliani and his crack team, whoever the origin is, who knows? But it's what they did was, if I had to guess, allegedly, supposedly, who knows? It sounds like they scouted this store, knew the guy was a Trump supporter, dropped this laptop off, filled with all sorts of shit. The guy snoops it, which doesn't even make sense, right? That's like, if you know anything about a computer repair shop, that's not how it works. But there's always sketchy people, so okay, fine. And maybe this guy is known to be sketchy in that way. So they plant the computer with him. He finds the information. They're so surprised. They take it. And now they're leaking the information. So then it blows up because Facebook and Twitter take the information down. And I believe that Facebook and Twitter completely fucked that up, right? Like, they shouldn't have taken the information down. They've been in a fight with Trump this entire time about, you know, their power and control and everything else. And Trump uses it as a distraction. So I don't think that, you know, Twitter taking it down wasn't the right move, because what it did was it allowed the Trump team to pivot off of the legitimacy of the information and just focus on what Twitter and Facebook did by removing the New York Post article that has this shit that is likely bullshit, right? So no one's talking about the veracity of the information. Everyone's talking about what Facebook and Twitter did by removing it from their sites. Facebook and Twitter needed to stay the fuck out of it so that people could focus on what, like, so people could decide for themselves what the hell we're actually looking at.
Well, I can guarantee you this will become the right-wing smoking gun. I mean, this is the Hail Mary for them, in my opinion. I didn't know it got that shady. I saw some headlines. I didn't really dig into it. I saw some stuff getting talked about on Fox. That is hilarious, actually. And if this thing comes to any kind of actual value, I'll be curious. But you know damn well it is going to be the marching cry of the right from now until November 3rd. And then on November 3rd, just like the coronavirus, it's going to magically go away. If you don't recognize the sarcasm, I'm not directing that at you, that's your fault. But right. But it will go away, because even if Hunter Biden is the world's biggest scumbag, and you've put out there that he's not a good guy.
He's up there.
I don't care.
Right, he's not running for president. Right, I mean, the reality is, look, I think Hunter Biden made plenty of missteps and fuck-ups along the way. I think Joe Biden knows his son is a burden to him politically.
Right.
But I think the one thing is Joe Biden's a good father, and Joe Biden has probably gone above and beyond what he has needed to do to try to help his son and deal with his demons. His son has addiction issues, right?
Yeah.
He likes the cocaine and he drinks too much. And when you combine those things over the course of 40 plus years, however old he is, you tend to have a lot of fuck-ups that you have to deal with. And that's where Hunter Biden is right now. Now, the issue is that is any of this stuff applicable to Joe Biden? And the answer is 99.9% of it, probably not. You know, now the question comes in, did Hunter Biden manage, right, to get someone from Burisma or some shady character in the same room as Joe Biden over the course of, you know, the time when Biden was in the White House? And even that isn't necessarily a crime or criminal, but the look of it isn't good, and it's something that would need to be investigated. And so that's where we have to look and see, like, what Hunter Biden was doing, what he did, and, like, what we actually do we have proof of anything? You know, now remember, Burisma got hacked by Russia, probably about 4 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, maybe longer. I think it was post-impeachment, but it was pre-corona. Like,
it's corona fervor. It defines our timelines right now.
I mean, so there was this small window in there where I think the Russians hacked Burisma. It was a big hack. And, like, nothing really came of it. They're like, you know, everyone's just, you know, everybody on the right was like, oh, this is the fallout. Now we're going to see all the dirt, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Well, nothing ever came of it, right? So now the question is, and this is just theory, that they've taken and pieced some of the stuff from that hack together, the Russians did, and then kind of put it together and somehow got it to Rudy Giuliani and his team, right? And then either the Russians planted the laptop somewhere, or, you know, they gave it to Rudy Giuliani, or Rudy Giuliani planted it on a laptop, something along those lines, and that's what they're using to try to, you know, take down Joe Biden.
Right. It's a desperation move.
It's a desperation move. It is, just I don't even know how to describe it, right? Like, I mean, you literally couldn't make this stuff up in a bad political action movie if you tried. But that's where we're at with the Hunter Biden emails.
So, you mentioned earlier drawing in clickbait, and I have a passion for calling out bullshit headlines that are just there to suck you in. And I saw one that I was convinced was going to be one of those. It said, U.S. Senator intentionally mispronounces Kamala Harris's name. And I'm thinking, he's going to have said Kamala, and this is an attempt by this organization to make a big deal out of what is essentially nothing, is what I was expecting. But I clicked it, and I listened to the tape. And Senator David Perdue from Georgia, at a rally for Trump, was saying, and Kamala, Kamala, ma-la-la-la-la, or something like that. And we'll play that for you right now.
And Kamala, or what, Kamala, or Kamala, Kamala, Mala, Mala, I don't know. Whatever.
Okay, that's not mispronouncing a name. That's being, at best, a juvenile and making fun of someone's name like you're in high school and you secretly like her. I thought this guy came off as a complete tool, and the guy's a motherfucking U.S. senator who has worked with Kamala Harris for, I don't even know how long they've been together, but
at least
years.
3 years, right?
And, yeah, and the fact that this guy's out there doing shit like that, and the crowd going wild and cheering it on is incredibly disappointing, or...
But it's why he did it.
I know. The fact that it works is making me smash my face.
Right, he did. That's why he did it, right? Like, he did it because he knew that they would react the way that they did, right? I mean, it's just like, you don't give him, you know, it's not like he's a great strategist,
right.
But I mean, he knew in that crowd that would get them worked up, so he did it.
Do you know? Do you see a racial component to that? I do, but I wasn't going to necessarily jump on it.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's a, you know, it's a non-traditional, it's a non-white, non-traditional name that, you know, in our society, we constantly look at anything that's not, you know, Bob Smith or, you know, Steve Brown.
Right.
Then all of a sudden we can't pronounce anything. Right. Like we just we don't know. I mean, Key and Peele did a great skit on this where, you know, Keegan-Michael Key kind of did it in reverse. Right. Where he would look at like white people's like standard names and just completely fuck them up.
I never saw that.
You what?
I never saw
that's
that.
That's where the whole Aaron thing comes from.
Okay.
Hey, Aaron, get over. Anyway, it's a Key and Peele skit. You need to see it. But, you know, because he literally goes, he literally. Oshak Hennessy. Anyway, but it's a funny skit because I mean you see this done on a pretty consistent basis. You know, it's most evident in classrooms, right? That's part of the skit, right? Like it's done in a classroom, and in this particular instance, like you know, growing up, like I would see it all the time. You have a black girl, and you know, if her name was Keisha, right? K-E-I-S-H-A. Kai Sean, like you know what I mean, like just complete butchering of these names, and so this, so yeah, there's a racial component. This was clearly intentional, and I think clearly done to get a specific reaction out of the crowd when he did it.
You're giving me a flashback to an old Bills game when number 56 from the Bills in the 90s made a tackle, and someone said Dyrell Tally on the tackle. It's Daryl.
Daryl. Yeah, it's I mean, a buddy of mine, his last name is Menendez, and we were, I forget where we were in high school playing a game, and the announcer now goes over the stands, and they say, blank and blank, Sanchez for the tackle, and we all look up like,
Sanchez?
Sanchez, right? And then the guy, like, and then, so my buddy makes another play, and it's just like, oh, Paul, Hernandez,
oh
right? Like,
God.
And it goes through, and there's a couple iterations of it. Finally, gets it right, and like,
did the guy, crowd go wild?
No, well, the guy finally gets his name. Like, my buddy, it's Mike, makes a tackle, and the guy says his name right. Mike throws his arms up in the air, like fucking finally, and we're all just like, "Geez, man, that's bad." But anyway,
yeah, so anyway, I just found that a U.S. senator was doing this shit to show how low we've sunk in terms of. You know, senators are supposed to be the senatorial ones. That's a word for more dignity and more, you know, whatever, prestige. And way to go there, David Perdue, I believe. David Perdue.
David.
Yeah, so anyway.
Prestige worldwide, more like it.
And so that, you know, I found just to be so low class. But there's a lot of other stuff going on that isn't even that much hype. I mean, Coney Barrett is about to get approved by the Judiciary Committee, and she will go for a full Senate vote. And I didn't pay as much attention to this as I probably should because it's a big deal.
Yep.
This is definitely your wheelhouse more than mine. I didn't know she'd only been a judge for 3 years. I know that doesn't disqualify her, but...
Yeah, so, look, man, I wasn't a big fan of the Judiciary Committee... it wasn't productive. You know, and part of this is how we have, you know, how the Judiciary Committee has done this in the past. She didn't do anything that much more different than previous justices have done in terms of basically not answering questions. Right.
Right.
I mean, because that's a lot of what she did was, I can't answer that as it's something that could come up and I don't want to, you know, tip my hand or whatever. Which I think that, you know, what needs to happen is that the Judiciary Committee needs to kind of put together some rules and some boundaries in terms of what's an acceptable answer, what's not an acceptable answer. And if answers are deemed unacceptable, then there needs to be some sort of penalty. Not necessarily a vote against, but like something that, you know, the senators have to take into account. But I mean, like she's, I don't know, like she, I believe in some instances that she could be beneficial to the court. Her age, her thought process. Like I did spend some time last week reading some of her scholarly writings, right? Like some stuff she's written in journals, some of the decisions, and some of her thought process I appreciate. Some of it I don't. And some of it, you know, when I really dug into it, there's some things, you know, when she says she's a strict originalist, a strict constitutionalist, it shows in some of her writings, and it is, it will be problematic, because I think that she's gonna, if she's willing to open her mind a little bit and consider real world consequences and impacts to what she's saying, right? Because what she'll do is she'll go through and say, well, this, like, you need these seven elements, right? And then this seventh element was not exactly met the way that it was supposed to, but I have these other six, but the seventh one wasn't met, so I'm going to completely throw everything out the window regarding the other six elements, because this particular one wasn't completely met, or it was partially met, and I'm going to completely go against everything else. Now, this may be really problematic for, you know, a certain group of people, and it may whatever, but this is what I'm going to do. And the issue with that is when you're on the Supreme Court, I think that while we want them to be completely objective, we want them to be almost like robots, they do have to take into account real world consequences, right? Like with whether it's the Voting Rights Act or the Civil Rights Amendment or Roe v. Wade or you know, pick a landmark constitutional case, and you see that they have to take into account, like, you know, like I said, the law, but then also the overall impact that it's going to have. And I worry, you know, because I can't get caught up in who's appointing her. I can't get caught up in her politics and her religion as much as we want to, because let's say this was, what if she were a Muslim, right?
Well,
if she were a Muslim. Well, I mean, just like, I mean, not like, this isn't a meme. This is a conversation between me and you. What if she were a Muslim, right? Like, so are we going to say because she's a Muslim, then we have concerns about how she's going to rule on the bench, right? Like, I mean, I can't, like, and so the thing is, I don't know.
Would people be saying that? Absolutely they would.
Yeah, I mean, they would. And so, like, that's why I think, like, and I don't know if it truly will have an impact, because we have plenty of Muslim lawyers, right?
Sure.
We got Muslim judges. So I believe that they can do their job without their religion, you know, seeping in and impacting it.
But now, to what degree, the fact that she's only been a judge for 3 years, like when Kavanaugh was nominated, you know, I got so much shit from my liberal friends for calling out some of the attacks on him, but
you don't have to be a judge.
I do know that. But what I was going to say was that there was a lot of looking into his past decisions. He had a long track record of things that they could look at and say, she does not have that long of a track record.
Right.
So her scholarly writings are a legitimate thing to judge her on or assess her on. Whereas, again, with Kavanaugh, you could look at what has he done as a federal judge, as a local judge, and there was 20 years of history. So anyway, I initially thought that all these attacks on her being ultra, ultra Catholic were out of nowhere, but they don't have as much to say. Here's what we have to trust you on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think because she doesn't have a long history, you're starting to look at other factors to figure out, like, is this going to work? Does this make sense? And I think obviously Democrats are going to go berserk and say there's no way she can't. Right. Look who's nominating her, and she's got all these kids. And
she believes that A Handmaid's Tale is a documentary.
Like she's going to take us back, and, you know, she's either going to take us back to the, you know, back to the past or into the Handmaid's Tale future. But the reality is she's only been a judge for 3 years. She's relatively young. I think her legal mind is definitely still in a place where it can evolve. And we've seen this before where it does not work out well for conservatives.
when people's minds evolve?
No, well, I'm just saying, like, I mean, like, you can get a judge on a bench who, you know, like, these people evolve over time, and she's going to be, now there's going to be more conservatives on this bench, but I think you know, say what you will about Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Alito and all these other people. Like, listen, these people have been in, you know, like some of the other more experienced people that, I mean, well, no, actually, we're actually starting to run out, right? Well, I mean, people with a lot of experience on the bench, right? I mean, there's actually, you know, fewer and fewer. But, you know, you've got Chief Justice Roberts. You've got an Elena Kagan. You've got a couple other people, you know, and Clarence Thomas, but, you know, Clarence Thomas is who he is. You know, you've got a Neil Gorsuch, and I think Gorsuch has a really good mind for the Supreme Court. And so I think over time she could be influenced. She could be influenced to evolve in a way that, you know, may not be as, I guess.
Right-wing is their hoping.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just hard to say, you know?
All right, well.
We'll see where it goes. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point because there's no way to stop it.
There's that. And she basically had to survive the hearings without completely tripping up, and she did not. So yeah, that's pretty much that. I sent you an article, and I find this very bizarre. So the article said the Department of Justice is suing Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, who wrote the Melania and Me book. And so the DOJ is filing a civil lawsuit against a citizen for allegedly violating a non-disclosure agreement and saying that the money she makes from that book should be put in some fund, and I don't even know if they're saying what that fund should go to. But to me, as a guy who doesn't, you know the law as well as you, this seems incredibly fucked up. It sounds like the White House is using the DOJ for personal civil litigation, which should never happen as far as I can read it.
This is, now listen, this is to me one of the more scarier aspects of everything. I think Bill Barr has completely overstepped his bounds. I think Bill Barr has completely shown that this is, like, he is not acting as the Attorney General for the United States. He is acting as a personal attorney for Donald J. Trump and his family. I think that some of the stuff that he's doing is very dangerous. I think that this is, his actions are causing some major issues within the Department of Justice. And I think one of the biggest reasons why I oppose Donald Trump is because of his selection of Attorney General, because of the impact that they can have. And this is another nail in the coffin for me. Bill Barr has just proven that he can't be in that role. He just shouldn't be. I mean, and so what's happening is, because there's not an express rule, right, or law that says that he can't do this, he's doing it. And he's going to force. Now the question is who has standing to prevent him from doing this? And so the best case scenario is that a judge steps up and says, all right, look, this is a stone too far, right? Like, and just throws it out. And issues, you know, some sort of stern, you know, very, very, you know, stern letter, which I have to imagine they would probably appeal. But like this is where this is where elections have consequences, because Mitch McConnell and company have been stuffing the court with judges along the federal bench for the last 4 years, right? At all levels. Like, everyone's so worried about the Supreme Court, but they also have been doing it at the lower levels across the board with judges who are barely qualified.
And, you know, also lifetime appointments in a lot of cases, right?
Right. So you've got a lot of people who are very, very inexperienced on the bench that are grateful for the position that they're in, who are more than willing. Oh, DOJ, that's the winning team. Okay, go ahead, go. And so that's scary to me. This is very scary, because this is dangerous territory. That I can't tell you exactly where I fall on this from a legal standpoint. This is just something I've never contemplated before. I've never seen it. I would need to, you know, kind of defer to someone with more experience than myself to be able to break this down and figure out how to properly combat it. Because I just, there's no place for the Department of Justice to be suing civilians on behalf of, you know,
the First Lady,
the First Lady or federal employees because of money that the publisher, like, this is insane, right? Like, I mean,
I'm glad you're saying that because I thought this is an exact word, was insane,
right?
And I thought you might tell me, no, this actually isn't all that rare, but like, it seemed crazy to me, and the fact that it's not even a top story is a problem.
Right, and you know, and then the question, oh, well, she signed an NDA, right? NDAs aren't the end-all, be-all. NDAs get overturned all the time in federal court and, you know, state and local court as well. But NDAs, you know, non-disclosure agreements are not the end-all, be-all. Donald Trump tends to think that they are. You know, and guys like him, it's like, oh, sign this and we'll give you, you know, like if you sign it and you take something, you know, you get something in return, then it's harder to overturn them. But I don't know if Stephanie Winston Walkoff received anything for this NDA, right? Like, I mean, I believe that she's an author. I know she was following Melania and, you know, I'm pretty sure that it was agreed that that she was working on a story, working on a book or something along those lines. And so I'm not sure what the NDA would cover. You know, it's just like, all right, hey, I'm going to follow you and chronicle what you're doing as First Lady, and I'm going to write a book about you. Is that okay? Yeah, sure, it's great, but I just need you to sign this NDA. Okay, well, in the book, I'm going to write about stuff that you do. So this NDA doesn't necessarily, well, you can't write about certain stuff. Okay, fine. So the question is then, was the NDA, did it have specific things that Stephanie Winston Walkoff couldn't discuss that she put in the book anyway? Then, okay, maybe you've got something to stand on there. But then the remedy for that isn't going to be all the proceeds from the book go to
some
weird fund that ends up with, you know, Brad Parscale driving another Ferrari. That's just not how this works. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's very scary. It's, to me, that's one of the big reasons, you know, some of the shit that William Barr is trying to pull out of the Department of Justice and some of the stuff that he's even said, right? Because he's even said in interviews, you know, why can't I do this? Why can't I protect the president? Who says I can't? Like you know what I mean? Like he's at a point now where he doesn't give a shit, right? Like, I mean, he's just out there in broad daylight, completely just kind of violating his office. And people are like, well, if there's not a written rule against it, then he's not violating his office. Come on, right? Like, I mean, like, so now there's just like, if it's not specifically written, right, then it doesn't count. Like, we just have no moral compass. We have nothing. Like, now, so now if it's not codified and written down, then it's just, it doesn't count and you can do whatever the fuck you want. No, I don't think that should really be an acceptable way to run our various branches of government. And it also makes it virtually impossible for checks and balances to exist.
I agree. And William Barr, I think, uses how boring he is as a person as a superpower. When he talks, when he does anything, he is just so dull that people tune him out.
Maybe. I don't tune him out.
Well, you're more in tune to things like this than the average Joe.
Yeah, I think that he's doing a lot of things that people aren't paying attention to. And I think that there are people who are willing to support Trump at any and all costs who will justify it and say, that's fine, I'm okay with it. But in any other circumstance, they would not be fine with it. They would not be okay with it. And part of this is a little bit on Obama and Bush before him because of some of the leeway that they allowed their attorney generals to have. And I think it came back to bite them both. But we really didn't do anything about it. And so now you've got William Barr who says, well, there's just no rules.
Here's an amazing thing. William Barr is distinctly less ethical and, I'm going to say, less likable than Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. He's less ethical. At least Sessions had the class to recuse himself.
Look. I don't... That gets us nowhere. The reality is that that gets us nowhere. What we have is what William Barr is doing, what's right in front of us, right? And whether we, you know, like sitting there attacking, oh, he's not as ethical. Okay, but we know what he's doing. We have what he's doing, right? Like that's the fucking spaghetti on the wall, right? Like that's the big fucking giveaway. Like I don't give a fuck about, you know, well, is he ethical? Is he nice? Well, is he all that other? Like he's talking, like he is fucking violating.
That's ethical or lack of ethical.
But what I'm saying is like you have the actual actions themselves. So I don't need a name for it. I have it.
Okay.
you know what I mean? Like that's like saying, that's like me beating the shit out of you and saying, Steve, you're not a very nice guy. Like, okay, that's fine, but like he just beat the shit. Who cares if he's nice? Right. Like, call the fucking police.
Okay, so, all right, man, we got to wrap up in a little bit, but I need a chance to bitch and do it using this platform because I very openly and comfortably identify myself as a liberal. Having said that, when I run into hardcore liberals, it can be brutal. This week, I got a ton of shit for being too soft on court stacking because I said it's a terrible idea. And I pointed to examples last week, and I think we're completely on the same page, that every time people try to do things for short-term political gain, it bites them in the ass. And when you fuck with the Supreme Court, that would be a terrible decision. I got messages and texts and emails saying, you know, well, the Republicans started cheating. We need to cheat back, which is fundamentally flawed. But that's nothing compared to what I saw. Did you see the video of the guy that was getting chased by the mountain lion?
I sure did.
I thought it was a really cool video. And that animal was a scary animal. I mean, it was really cool. Yeah. We caught the video of it and whatever. He gets away fine.
I mean, I've encountered an actual mountain lion in real life. Not like in this video. It didn't attack me. It didn't come at me. But this is... you know, Steve in Chicago story, there was an actual a mountain lion like that in like was stalking in the middle of my street, and I had to stay in my car for an extended period of time until it cleared the area. Like it is not like it's not nearly as big as like a lion or a tiger,
right?
But it
can fuck you up.
It's bigger than any fucking cat I've seen that's not a lion or a tiger. And it's as big as a big fucking dog, and I wanted nothing to do with it.
And you chose wisely.
Right. And so, yes, I saw the video, and I am all for that guy, you know, getting out of there the way he did.
So, a friend of mine on Facebook who is ultra, ultra, ultra liberal reposted something that basically said, is this mountain lion A, stalking, or B, a mother protecting her cubs like a responsible mother would, or something that dumb? And I couldn't help myself because I couldn't. I wanted to verify: are you actually saying you're worried about media coverage of mountain lions? And both my friend and her friends that came piling on actually were. And one of them came at me and said, "Imagine if you were called. So you know, calling this a mountain lion a stalker is unfair. Imagine if you were called a rapist. Wouldn't you want people to know that you're not a rapist?" And I said, it's time for me to use my superpower of snarky dickishness and engage with this person and said, you are correct. I would hate it if being called a stalker affected this mountain lion on her next job interview. And when she came back at me with something even dumber, she said something about, she's just a lion defending her cubs. And I actually said, how do you know she identifies as she? Why are you so transphobic? At that point, it didn't get better. But the whole point is, and you talk about this all the time, liberals eating themselves over stupid nonsense. Mountain lion media rights is not an issue anyone should give a flying fuck about. No one's going to start protesting against rights.
Mountain lion media rights.
Fuck! There are people doing this shit, and it's killing liberals. Stop being stupid.
I mean, it's not even killing liberals, right? Like, it's just what they... It's just... You know, like my this one weird issue that I'm really into is the most important issue in all the world, right? You know, like I follow this one group called the Foot Collective on Instagram.
I'm nervous.
And so they're big on, you know, using our feet the way we're supposed to, right? Like, so they're anti, they're basically anti-shoe. But if you're going to wear a shoe, you should be wearing a shoe with a really wide toe box that allows, you know, basically
a minimalist.
Yes, basically a piece of leather wrapped around your foot tied with string, right? Like really, really, really minimalist. And I've got a buddy who's really into this movement. And he like sends me all the time, like, hey, this is, here's a shoe you could wear to the office that'll help, that doesn't have a heel and that's not narrow. And I'm like, but I'm not wearing that. I look like Ronald McDonald. Sorry. And he's like, what's more important, function or fashion? I was like, in my world, fucking fashion. I walk in wearing a Ronald McDonald piece of leather tapped around my shoe, I'll fucking lose my job. Stop. Like, but this group, like they are so passionate about our feet. And like they want to change laws in terms of like what, how shoe companies are allowed to make shoes, and you know, we're making these minimum requirements on the width of the toe box and all this other stuff. And it's just like, okay, people, I got an attorney general here that's that is working on you know, at the pleasure of the fucking president, right? And not at the, you know, not for the American people. I got a president, right, who is out of his fucking mind. Right, like I've got the world is fucking burning around me, and I got this broad worried about fucking how cougars are addressed in the media, and I got you saying that we need new laws to change the way our fucking feet should. Everybody, just stop. It's insane. I mean, it gets frustrating because, you know, someone actually called me. They're just like, you're an ally to the movement. And they described me as an ally to the movement. And I'm like, what movement? And they're, you know, just, oh, well, you know, like, you know, she is a white lesbian, right, that lives in California. And she, like, very strong feminist, but she's super into Black Lives Matter. And so she, I was trying to explain something to her that she had, like, she was factually very, very wrong.
Okay.
And I said, these are the facts of that case. It was a legal case that she put out. Like, here are the facts. This is what happened. And she said, you know, you looking in as an ally, you really shouldn't be attacking me. And I'm like, whoa. How am I an ally? Right? Like, how am I an ally? And, you know, she's like, cisgendered male. I'm like, oh, okay. But we're talking about black lives. We're talking about how, like, ally, fuck you. Like, I'm right in the middle of this. Like, the whole reason why your fucking little group exists is because people that look like me, that were cisgendered black males, were getting murdered in the fucking street. Don't fucking turn around and call me a fucking ally, right? I'm at the whole fucking heart of this thing.
Well,
right? I mean, and
also, truth isn't pointing out truths isn't attacking somebody.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the other thing. It's just like, I'm not attacking you. I'm trying to help you, because when I try to present an argument and you, like, if we're trying to present arguments to the same person, but you get to them first and you present something that is inaccurate, then I have to battle to undo the damage that you did. And then I have to proceed to move towards getting that person to the truth. And usually I will lose because you've done such a good job of poisoning them with misinformation. Right, like, so that is where you and the MAGA people are very similar, because you, as long as it fits your narrative of progressive and left wing and you know, it champions gay rights and it champions, you know, diversity, whatever, even if it's not true or even if it's not accurate or even if it's an improper interpretation of the data, then you'll present it out there as truth. And then what the fuck am I supposed to do when someone comes at me and says, you know, your partner, your one of your co-allies or whatever, this is what they said, it's completely bullshit, therefore I'm not going to listen to you because your arguments are bullshit, right? And it's just like, no, they're wrong. Don't listen to them, just listen to me. But then at that point, we're lost, right? I mean, and it's just, it's frustrating. That's why I don't identify as a liberal. I don't identify as a Democrat. I'm me. I'm Steve. I try to be as independent as possible. I try to think through things, and I try to think within what's in the best interest for me and my family. And more often than not, that gets me away from Donald Trump.
Right. All right, man, you ready to wrap this up?
Yeah.
All right, we are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with the debate discussion, if the debate happens. We're out.